Yes, yay. But challenging also. We're going to go back to Harry Potter because there's something I also really enjoy the world of Harry Potter more than any grown-ass woman should. I was going to say good morning.
You could say good morning. That's fine.
What if I'm wrong?
What if they're watching it in the morning?
Yeah. What if it's morning? What if it's not? Just if you need someone to say good morning to you, good morning. Everybody say good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And now we're a morning show. Okay. Hi, I'm Cammy Chaos.
And I am Rick Tarosi. And we, as you know, are mildly interesting people. That's why every single week we do our best to bring somebody far more interesting than we are to the show so we can chat with them. Now, they may not be familiar to you, but they're famous to us. Cammy, who is our guest this week?
This week is a tricky one. She's not a trick. Well, she is a tricky one. But this week is a tricky one because this person who I have come to adore, I've always worked with, but we don't like talking about work. And we try not to talk about work on this podcast. So we're going to have this phenomenal conversation with Allie Nimmons. And we're going to try to avoid the way that Allie and I met, but not the biggest things that we have in common. Hi, Allie.
Hi, Cammy. Hi, Rick.
Hello.
Allie, how are you today?
I'm good. It is also not morning where I am. It is afternoon, which is nice. I'm good. Enjoying my Saturday.
Talk to me about being a human person on the internet.
You said 45 minutes? Jeez.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Keep it brief, Allie.
Sure. Being a human person on the internet is challenging and awful and wonderful. And as a millennial, it is the only existence I've kind of ever known. Yeah. I think I started being a human person on the internet. Yeah, sixth grade, my friends made me a Gmail email account because that was how they talked to each other. And I didn't have an email account, and so I couldn't, like, join in on those conversations. And at the time, I still am, I suppose. At the time, I was very, very, very into Harry Potter. I was the Harry Potter girl. Mm-hmm. And so my username for a very long time was Potterhead92, because that's what my friends thought was appropriate for me. That was the beginning of my being a human on the internet. And I spent a lot of time writing Harry Potter fan fiction, which I think also a lot of millennials can probably identify with.
Yeah.
So somewhere out there, there are some very questionable writings that I've written about Harry and Draco falling in love and weird shit like that.
Nice.
As we're not going to speak about, I made my living being a person on the internet. Yep. I'm trying to do less of that and be a human being off the internet for a while, which, it's going to be really weird and interesting and fun. Which, ironically, tomorrow I'm getting on a plane and flying to California to record a course for LinkedIn Learning. Yes. So I'm going to spend even more time being a human on the internet and helping other humans on the internet learn how to be better at being humans on the internet, which feels very full circle.
You and I have had a conversation a lot. It's not a conversation. We have had many conversations about kind of the disconnect that a lot of people experience in technology. Mm-hmm. Understanding that you're not just dealing with a piece of technology, you're dealing with the humans that built it. You're dealing with other people. Like, I like to call it the private lives of proper nouns. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for some folks more than others to remember that everybody has a full life and a full story, and everybody has something going on. I don't know that, given the time frame in which Rick and I came up in the world, we had to think as much about that, because we weren't inundated, like from sixth grade, right? Mm-hmm. That's your first moment with Gmail. What is it like to have, I mean, quite sincerely, I didn't know we were going to go this direction. My entire childhood was offline. Like I didn't have to worry about any of that. What's it like having grown up in the information age?
Well, I think I got really lucky in that I had a mom. I have a mom. Hello.
Hi.
I have a mom.
Hi, mom.
She's not trying to get rid of you, I promise. No. I think.
I said that like having a mom was a thing of the past. I have a mom who, in the past, you know, I was the only child of a single parent. So we would joke a lot of time that we were a set of matching luggage. Mm-hmm. And anywhere she went, I was there beside her, slightly behind, as though she was just pulling me along like a rolling suitcase. And she was able to work in a lot of places that she could bring me with her, primarily mm-hmm. in theater. So I spent a lot of my childhood sitting underneath the production desk, watching, you know, a show be put together. And I did that until I couldn't fit under the production desk anymore. And I got to actually, we actually had a production manager look at me one day after a few years and be like, can you do anything yet? We need stuff. We need things. Can you run this over there? Like, and I started getting, you know, little roles and jobs, and I got to be on stage and I got to do things. And so much of my childhood was luckily, and I don't even think it was by design, was not on the internet. So like, I could use the internet for school. I could use the internet for fan fiction. I'm still friends with some of the people that I was writing with in middle mm-hmm. school. So there was that very much like there is another person on this forum that I'm speaking to, and I know them and I interact with them, and we would talk about, you know, being preteens and teens and things like that. But I think I was really lucky in that I grew up. My formative years were really before social media. I think social media is the kind of the big, dark, angry thing that mm-hmm. makes it a lot harder. So yeah. Like I got a Facebook in high school, but I really only used it to like post pictures of, you know, homecoming dances and stuff. Like we didn't really rely on that for our socialization necessarily. And it wasn't until I would say college, when I was, you know, the cookie dough was almost done baking in my head, that social media really became a thing that like people relied upon to connect with each other. So between like what I think was the healthy time that I spent online, and then theater, which between the ages of 5 and 18 kept me very busy. And that's a very there were Zoom plays during the pandemic, but theater is so interpersonal. Mm-hmm. There really isn't any internetifying that. I got really lucky in that I don't feel like I grew up with a lot of the challenges that, like, you know, there is going to be a whole generation that doesn't understand the world without TikTok in it. And that to me is very frightening.
mm-hmm. Confession. I'm still trying to figure out TikTok.
I've never downloaded TikTok. I watch 3-month-old TikToks that have been re-uploaded to Instagram as reels. And I find that to be sufficient.
I like that. And that's how I used to manage it. But then Rick was all like, we're on TikTok now. Doing TikTok, Cam.
Gotta explore the things. Well, and part of it is like super interesting to me. I was thinking about this the other day that I think you hear a lot of backlash about like short form content, and it is destroying our attention span and those kind of things. But I'm also like, I grew up with Sesame Street and Electric Company, and those are short format, like MTV. Little snippets. And then MTV mm-hmm. came, and those are little short format snippets. Like it's something we've been having to deal with as humans for a while, but to your point, Allie, like the TikTokification of everything, like it now every media format or every way we experience people is kind of in very short, truncated ways, which like what do you think that is doing to a generation of people that has been their only form of expression,
that it's baked into their brain cookie dough.
I
love
that. I stole that for Buffy. I'm not going to claim ownership of that.
nice reuse.
Yeah. So I think the thing with like TikTok and social media that I think about a lot is not even so much that it is short form content, because like you said, we have all kinds of other older forms of short form content. And it is, I mean, there's a period of time where people would go and sit for 6 hours to watch a Shakespeare play. Right. And, you know, we want to get the same emotions and feelings and communications out in more succinct ways. That to me feels very human and natural. Why spend 8 hours saying something that you could say in an hour? For me, what concerns me the most about TikTok that is so different from like Sesame Street or, you know, short episodes of a cartoon or something like that is the lack of regulation.
Mm.
Right? Because like, mm-hmm. I could watch a video that is super short, and it's less so to me about the whole attention span thing and more about what did I just watch and how am I going to carry it through with me? Like, who all am I going to send it to that then they're going to carry it through with them? And like, it sounds so like, I don't know, but like the spreading of misinformation and the spreading of like just fucking like stupidity. Right? Like kids watching other people on TikTok do things that are unethical, immoral, mm-hmm. illegal, just plain messed up, and thinking like, well, that's okay. Right? Like that person did it and they're really rich and
it's
successful.
It's funny. So it's like, a parody. Okay.
You know, like not to bring everything back to Harry Potter, but
Harry Potter. I'm glad you did. There's another path.
Yay, cool. That was my primary form of entertainment for a lot of years, was reading Harry Potter over and over and over. And I learned most of what I know, I think, about like friendship and doing the right thing and justice and all of these things from those books. That is where I absorbed all of that information. Mm-hmm. And there are some studies that have been done about millennials and how our sense of social justice comes from Harry Potter, which I think is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And so with TikTok, it's like my husband and I the other day were watching a YouTuber like reacting to a bunch of TikToks, and they were like the sort of people who would like be in the gym and be recording themselves making a TikTok, and somebody would walk past the camera and they would be like, ugh, like get really annoyed, right? And so it's spreading all of these ideas about like what are you entitled to as a person out in the world, and it's all of those things freak me out of like what are we actually teaching these kids whose brains are not baked yet, and what are they growing up to believe is right for them to then like replicate and emulate at the same time. So
remulate.
And I love that you would use the word entitled, because that if I, you know, obviously I did not grow up with access to all the information that humans have ever created at their, you know, at my fingertips my entire life. But I could see how that if I had, that would give me a certain form of entitlement with like, I get what I need and what I want when I want it pretty much immediately, like with little barrier to accessing that stuff. And it is just academically interesting to consider the ramifications of that mm-hmm. on somebody's personality or development or an entire culture of a generation. So I'm really glad that you touched on that. Thank you.
It's weird. Like people do say like millennials are entitled. And I think that to a degree that is true. I don't think I'm entitled to like wanting a safe place to live and a livable wage and all of these things that we're really demanding. I do think that I feel entitled to, information. Mm-hmm. And that has been a struggle in my life, in that I was a gifted kid and I had access mm-hmm. to all of this information. And so then as an adult, no longer being a gifted kid, the process of learning something and taking the time and the effort and the energy to like teach myself something new is very stressful, because mm-hmm. I am used to just Googling something and having the information and having like that be enough. which is, I think, a very unique problem that, like, my parents didn't have. They learned, like, yep. trades and skills and things, and, like, that was very normal. So, yeah, I think there's different levels of entitlement, particularly for millennials. And, like, this next generation of entitlement, I think a lot of it is, like, entitlement to attention. Like, that is what mm-hmm. I get from TikTok, is I am entitled to your attention. I am entitled yeah. to, you know, all of these other very superficial sorts of things, which that freaks me out as well.
Not to make this a total Ally therapy session, but...
But I would love some therapy,
but here's,
honestly.
But here's another
therapy.
Yeah, here's another question. Are you, because of your lived experience, are you comfortable being bad at something when you're starting to learn something?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that is a huge thing. And
would even ask that.
Yeah, right. I do think that is a pattern with a lot of millennials. It's like, yeah, we're not, especially the ones, because that was also the generation of, like, everyone gets a participation trophy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get to be told you suck at something. We were mm-hmm. all told through TV, through whatever, like, oh my gosh, I literally got to meet Steve Burns, who was the Blue's Clues guy, the original mm-hmm. Blue's Clues guy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was a ridiculous experience. But
hi, Steve.
I know, he was amazing. But what I really remember at the end of, like, the song that he would sing at the end of the show, like the very last, like, line of that song, or one of the last lines of that song, was, you can do anything that you want to do. And I think that is an entitlement that we grew up with, is like, you are amazing, you are perfect, you are wonderful, you can do mm-hmm. anything that you want, you can have everything that you want, which is not true. Like, my mm-hmm. mom used to say, like, yeah, you can be whatever you want, but you can't be the Pope. Right. And, like, I think that gave me some degree of, like, there are definitely limitations, and, like, I can be wonderful, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to be the best at everything. And it is something I, like, know intellectually, but it is still really hard to not want to be the best at everything. And if I'm not the best at everything, it's like, okay, well, what's wrong with me? Like, what did I do wrong? I don't deserve blah, 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 blah. But I think a lot of millennials feel that way because we were told so adamantly, you know, you are special and you can, you are fantastic and blah, 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 which is, sounds nice, but not everyone is special. Otherwise, no one is special, right?
Right.
Did I say that correctly? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's where you kind of run into the, is it nice or is it kind?
Mm.
Yeah. I'm going to veer. And we're left. We're going to go back to Harry Potter.
Yay.
Yes, yay. But challenging also. We're going to mm-hmm. go back to Harry Potter because there's something I also really enjoy the world of Harry Potter more than any grown-ass woman should. and part of it is because there was, like, that connection. I was reading it to my kid as she was growing up.
I can't wait to do that.
It's really exciting. And we lived just a block from this amazing old bookstore. And so every time there was a book opening, I would just literally walk a block, and she would release the books at midnight like they were allowed to do. So I'd walk a block in my pajamas, go get the book, and I would sit down and start to, like, read ahead. And I would tell myself it was because I wanted to make sure that there weren't any scary parts that I was reading before bedtime. I had to know what I was reading, but really sure. I was just like, no.
That reminds me of my right mom now. Always taking a handful of my Halloween candy to check for poison.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was checking for poison.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, love the Harry Potter world. It's amazing.
Me too.
It's also created by a deeply problematic human.
I've learned lots about that.
Like, yeah. And that's what I want to talk about, because she's a fucking turf.
She's awful. And it's very it's very upsetting.
How do you balance your, yeah? How do you, like, I don't feel like there's a conflict of loving a work and hating a person and realizing that the person who created this beautiful work isn't perfect and is bad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's challenging. And how do you deal with that? Because I know that you are, like, a fierce ally and feminist and friend to literally every single human who's decent.
I do my best.
You do a great job.
Some of it is practice, because I think I definitely encountered this problem with the whole Bill Cosby situation.
Oh,
and like, I mean, the entire Black community was just like, the betrayal, right, was mm-hmm. so complete. And I think that like, we are in this because we have access to all this information. We have to constantly have this conversation about separating the art from the artist. Like what happened last week with Danny Masterson. Like, I love that 70s show, and it's going to be really mm-hmm. hard for me to go back and watch that show now. Yeah. But I do think that you can separate the art from the artist, and I think that you can learn more about the art from the artist. So like, I feel like, I know a lot of people who are like, I am never going to read these books again. Like, I'm never going to engage in any of this again because of her. And I was like, well, then she wins, because then she gets to take that from you. Like, she gets to take from you what you found good and important in those books. So a huge theme of those books is that nobody is one thing or the other. Nobody is entirely good and nobody is entirely bad. And as much of a turf and an awful person as she is, she did something incredibly good, and it came from a good place in her. And I feel like it's like a disservice to all of people who benefited from that book to just say, well, now the book is garbage because she's garbage. I very much feel like I will never give any money to that franchise ever again. I will never buy a new copy of any of those books. I will never feed into, I will never go to any of the parks again. Like, I'm not going to feed into any of that, but that's not going to stop me from enjoying and still taking things from those books. What I think is really interesting too, is I've recently started like reevaluating the feminism in those books. And I think upon further reread, it is very obvious that J.K. Rowling hates women through those books. So my husband is a writer. He has a degree in creative writing from Florida State University. He is almost done with his first novel. He lives, breathes, eats, learning about the craft of writing. So I've learned a lot about writing through him. And in my, you know, highly educated knowledge about writing, I believe Hermione is the only well-written female character in that book, in those books. And it is because Hermione is directly based off of her. So she just spit herself out onto the page. All of the other female characters are stereotypes, underdeveloped, inconsistent. I mean, those books do not pass the Bechdel test out of 7 books. So like, my husband and I, we were in line at Starbucks in the drive-thru the other day. We had a long conversation going through every single female character to be like, yeah, Tonks is like cool, but she really only exists as a way to further Lupin's AIDS storyline. Ginny is cool, but she's just kind of this exciting sexual object. Well, first she's a victim and then she's an exciting sexual object.
Yeah.
I think the second best, maybe most developed character is Petunia, which, because she is so complex, right? Like, she starts off as this villain, and the more you learn about her, the more you feel sorry for her, and you realize like she wants the wrong things for the right reasons. I think the most important character in the whole books is Narcissa, because at the end of the day, she like puts her love for her family ahead of her bigotry and she saves the world. But she gets one scene in which to do that. She has no other scenes where she gets to show any other anything. She is a background set piece. There's that conversation where she talks to Snape and Bellatrix in like a flashback or something, but she doesn't really give, there's no character development really in that scene. She's just there as a like, my son, which is a stereotype. What are the 4 female stereotypes? You have the mother, the whore, and then there are 2 others.
The virgin. The virgin. Mother, the whore, the virgin.
There's another one. Please enjoy the clickety clacks.
Click, click, clickety, click, click, clack. This is my Googling song. Google.
it's just a three.
Oh,
that's fun.
Wow, we're solid.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
The Virgin, the Mother, and the Whore.
Now, I very clearly Mrs. Weasley is the mother, but what do you think of her character?
She's also debatable. I mean, she definitely gets the most, like, if you want to say screen time out of most of the female characters. Mm-hmm. She really is very much set in the mother stereotype, even though she also fought in that first war and, like, lost her siblings in that first
fucking
war.
A.
Never talks about that.
No one ever talks about the hardship that she, oh my goodness, that
the
woman.
We actually really talked about the fact that they had 8 kids, and even after Ginny goes off to Hogwarts, she doesn't work.
I know.
They complain about being poor all the time. And I have all empathy for people who grow up poor, because I grew up poor, but, like, there was no reason she couldn't be working. Like, it's very bizarre how she chose to paint this woman. And the only times that she was really, like, strong or outspoken was for her children, which is
right.
Not an inherently bad thing, but it is purely putting her in that stereotype where she doesn't want anything else. Even when she kills Bellatrix, it's for Ginny. It's just to protect Ginny. Like, she doesn't want anything ever for herself. And, like,
Rick, you're just going to have to, there's this amazing scene in the books and the movie. It's absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm sorry if we're spoiling something for you, but it's this like ultimate scene where the two moms are fighting. And, or not well, two moms. She's the mom and the evilest of the evil women.
Yes.
Are battling because Helena Bonham Carter, for your sake, fucked with Mrs. Weasley. I can't even remember Mrs. Weasley's name right now.
Molly.
Thank you. I keep calling her Mrs. Weasley because I was like, they've done such a good job of mommifying her that I couldn't remember. And Molly is a name I really love. Like, I had a doll named Molly when I was growing up. It made my mother crazy. Anyway, that is the scene in the story that troubles me more than any other, because I finally think that Molly has her moment of, like, strong woman protecting herself, protecting the world, doing what's right. And oh no, it's just because you were fucking with her kid.
Yeah.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, don't fuck with my kid.
That's part of it. That's a huge part of it. But, like,
but
the
I'm
mothering.
Only the mom.
Most of the adult women, their roles are mothers.
Yeah.
Molly, Narcissa, even McGonagall is, like, her endearing quality is...
She's the mother to all
her
of
mother hen.
Hogwarts.
Yeah. She's mother hen.
Not even just her class.
Yeah. And so, like, upon thinking back on those books, I'm just sort of like... I think we like to look at Hermione a lot as this, like, feminist, iconic character. Which I think Hermione really does fit take a lot of those boxes. But I think she was the easiest character to write.
Yeah.
And so it kind of doesn't count to me. So, like, that whole thing kind of just makes me more fascinated with the books and read them in a more critical way of, like, okay, well, now that I know more about the author, what does that say about the work? And so, like, I encountered that with Bill Cosby, and I'm gonna mess with some people, which I'm excited about. Something somebody pointed out to me about the whole Bill Cosby thing is, on the Bill Cosby show, he was a baby doctor. I guess he was an OB. And his office under the house. So he had this subterranean space where none of the other family was allowed, where he could be alone and look at women.
Wasn't there also an episode in which he drugged the spaghetti sauce or something?
I don't remember that, but possibly. I don't remember that.
There was something, like, there was some, he was just trying to get one of the kids to sleep, or I can't remember. I might be making it up. I'm going to tell you a Bill Cosby story.
Okay.
It should be known that I grew up, like, you know, Bill Cosby's classic comedy records. Grew up listening to those. They were, like, a huge part of my everyday life. My dad loved these comedy albums, and we would listen to them. And, like, the Chicken Heart one, and the Dad's Great Gives Us Chocolate
Cake.
That is
great. And, like, yeah.
I I literally in my childhood committed these to memory. And long after we should have known the Bill Cosby awfulness, but didn't. Rick and I were at South by Southwest. We were there with friends, and Bill Cosby was playing a pop-up show at one of the bars. Mm-hmm. And we stood, Allie knows me well enough to know I didn't have to go stand in line being around people. We went and stood in line literally for hours to get in to see Bill Cosby at this mm-hmm. little playhouse. As we are approaching the part where they're letting people in, we're like maybe 10 people back. They're like, okay, it's full. Sorry, everybody go away. And we were so incredibly sad because we didn't get to, I mean, like right lifetime there. Hero, comedic legend. And we didn't get to see him. And then it was just a few months later when we all hell broke loose publicly and we started to find out. And I've never been more relieved that I didn't see a show and sad that I didn't get that experience at the same time.
Yeah.
The information age messes with us by telling us everything if we actually want to know.
Yeah. Which is like, I have a huge problem with biopics in general. I don't think biopics should exist because it upsets me when the person is dead and they have no say.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it upsets me when the person is still alive and they usually have no say. So I just think there's really like never really a right way to do it. Where was I going with that? I was making a point about like knowing, oh, that like we can look at somebody like Elvis and Marilyn Monroe and be like, we'll never fully know. Like we know some weird stuff about them, but we don't know every single detail and we never will. And so we can kind of just continue to let them have this primarily romantic legacy and kind of leave it at that. And we can like look at the sad stuff that they went through, but it's mostly good.
Yeah.
And now it's like, yeah, I guess it's good to know that the Harvey Weinsteins of the world exist so that we can try to prevent that. Right. Yeah. But it prevents, like it has a lasting effect on so much of those works. Like I remember when the Bill Cosby stuff came out and the Cosby Show got pulled off of like syndication. That then meant that everyone who was getting residuals from those episodes stopped getting paid. And like, there's like, it's so complicated because it's like, we say, yes, we want the truth. We always want the truth. The truth needs to come out. And so many people get like hurt by the truth. Mm-hmm. It's just so complicated and it's so like upsetting. And it's just like, dude, I don't want to know all this. Like, I just feel like none of it, like even just seeing celebrity news in general, I'm just like, none of this is my business. Like the whole Sophie Turner, Joe Jonas divorce thing is constantly on my feeds. And I'm like, I don't care. It's not any of my business. Like I know more about their divorce than my parents' divorce. And it's fucking weird.
I have no idea who Sophie Turner is other than being married to the Jonas brother. I have which Jonas brother we're talking about, but I know exactly what you are talking about because I have seen so many snippets about their breakup. And I'm just like, dude, I've been divorced. I don't want, like,
that's so weird. It's so weird and voyeuristic. That was terrifying. It's so weird and voyeuristic. And like, I don't think people were meant to be perceived so much. Like, I can't imagine being them and being like, we can't make a fucking move. We can't breathe without millions of people knowing about it. I don't think our brains were meant to deal with that.
No, absolutely. I mean, think about pre-internet fame, right? Mm-hmm. That was a really big deal, fame. Like you're going to run into, we'll use Bill Cosby because we've been talking about him, right? You walk through the airport, you run into Bill Cosby and you're like, oh my God, it's Bill Cosby. In the internet age, we have created celebrity for everything. Mm-hmm. Like we've just manufactured celebrity. And it used to be everyone has their 15 minutes of fame. Now everyone has like their 15 seconds of TikTok fame or whatever. And yeah, we've got these folks who are living in the public eye. And I can't imagine the level of, even when you've done something wrong, like the amount of anxiety and scrutiny, the amount of scrutiny and the amount of anxiety that I would imagine that would cause even a person who's not anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand how everyone's not having a nervous breakdown.
It literally makes me wonder, like, if you become that famous to where, you know, all of everything you do is being scrutinized and talked about and blah, 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 and you live with that constantly. If I can't go outside without like somebody taking a picture of me, what does that do to like your brain chemistry? Like, how does that physically rewire your brain to interact with reality? Because at a certain point, it's like, no wonder all these people go apeshit. Like, no wonder all these people go crazy. No wonder these men decide that the only way that they can have an interaction with a woman is to do it the wrong way. Like,
yeah.
You don't have a realistic idea of what reality is anymore. And like, we as the audience, like, do that to them. It's very freaky. I think about it a lot. I think about like the psychology of celebrity a lot. And like, bring things back to Harry Potter, I think a lot about how normal those kids turned out versus how not normal a lot of American child actors turned out. Mm-hmm. And I think all of it has to do, well, a lot of it has to do with psychology. Like, Daniel Radcliffe, who played Harry, has, like, I remember somebody asking him, like, oh, when you go to a red carpet and you step out of the car and there are all these girls screaming for you, like, doesn't that make you so happy? And he was like, he's like, I think it's nice. I'm glad that they're happy. But if another dude had played Harry, they would be screaming just as hard for him. It's not for me.
Yep.
And I'm like, no wonder you're normal. Like, that's such a good way to think about it. But an adult told him that, like, somebody explained that to him. And that is now why he is functional. And then you look at a lot of other kids who were just told, you know, you are a money-making machine. And yes, you are special. You are important. You are wonderful. You're on top of the world. And like, what kind of sense of reality are you giving that person?
Yeah. I wonder if part of that isn't, though, because I would say I've seen that consistently with episodic art form. Like those kids knew from the day they started filming the first episode of Harry Potter that they were going to be those characters for a long, long time. And part of the dynamic was watching them grow up and grow into their characters. And so it's like running a marathon, right? Like, you know, like, this is going to take a while and we need to prepare these people to deal with this is their new reality for the next two decades. Whereas some other stars, like, it's either their good looks or it's their voice or it's, you know, their personality or whatever. And it's not really a planned, it's always planned. Let's be real. Like, every child actor is a planned thing, but to some extent it's not as easy to see that path as with, you know, you're going to be in the Hunger Games for the next decade, like those kind of things.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I never thought about it like that. And like, I found it really interesting that like Daniel Radcliffe's parents worked in the industry and they did not want him to do it initially. They were like, no, this is going to absolutely destroy your life. And it took a lot of coercing, but he had people like that in his corner to be like, okay, yeah, if we're going to do this for this long, this is how we're going to do it so that we don't break you. You know, it's so bizarre. And I know that there was conversation, I think after the third or fourth movie, about them recasting the kids because they kind of didn't want to do it anymore. They were all like 15, approaching 16. And they were like, this kind of sucks. And they didn't. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know how things would have gone if they had recast them. But I think about that kind of stuff often, of just like, our brains are not meant to be perceived so intensely. And it's super, super dangerous, especially for children.
Yeah. Well, and I think to Daniel Radcliffe's credit as a professional, he has like, I can tell you that Cammy and I are always excited when he has some new film coming out because we know it's going to be wacky.
Yeah.
It's like, he doesn't do normal.
He chooses his roles so
beautifully. Oh,
yeah.
I think he's so fantastic.
I never imagined the first time I saw him as Harry Potter that I would later be like watching a movie where he has guns duct taped to his hands. running through the streets madly.
He was the only teenage boy that I had like a poster of up on my wall in my room as a kid. I thought he was just the greatest goddamn thing ever made. I thought he was so, I mean, I still do think he's so wonderful. That was my like Justin Timberlake was doing the record. Fun fact. So you've heard of like 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, I think it's called.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I have a 1, 2, 3 degrees of Daniel Radcliffe, which I'm very proud of.
Wow.
Okay, tell us.
The movie that he was in a few years ago with Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum, what was it called?
Oh, The Adventure Out in the Jungle.
The silly like adventure comedy movie. The two brothers who directed that movie, Aaron and Adam Nee, their younger sister Grace was one of my best friends in college.
Oh my gosh.
And I went to their house once for Thanksgiving and had Thanksgiving with them. And so like this movie comes out and I'm like, oh, that looks cool. Oh, I recognize those names. Oh my gosh.
How does your husband feel now that you're basically betrothed to Daniel Radcliffe? Because
I mean, he's just going to kind of have to deal with it. That's not really my concern.
Cool.
Okay.
Good. That's fair. That's great.
Yeah. All right. He has a kid. I didn't know that. Did y'all know that?
Mm-mm. Daniel Radcliffe has a kid? No, yeah. I try not to learn things about celebrities.
I learned that very recently that he and his longtime girlfriend had a baby like earlier this year. And I'm like, that makes me feel old.
Congratulations. it makes you feel old that Daniel Radcliffe had a baby. That's
my childhood crush has a child.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to veer again. We're going to move on. Before we move on to mildly interesting questions, I'm going to say something that I've said a few times. And that I am not surprised I'm saying, we have way too many things to talk with you about. We could fill hours and hours and hours and hours. And I think we're going to have you back. If that's okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. We're going to have to think of a senior correspondent role for Allie.
Yeah.
We'll work on it.
I mean, it can be a Harry Potter senior correspondent for the time being.
Yeah. Yeah. But feel free to like, if you want to grow past that into another senior correspondent role, you let us know. All right. Let's move on. We
like to help people grow into senior correspondent. We have a starting point, but we're open
senior
to whatever.
Correspondent for Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yes. But I mean, the world is your oyster.
There's growth potential in the position. Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Let's move on to the mildly interesting questions. Lightning round.
I'm
going to ask. It's going to be okay. Rick will edit it and make it look like you answered really fast.
Okay.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But only for the Instagram shorts because he likes to put the full length videos up on the internet. Man likes to punish people. Okay. So I'm going to ask you, the first four questions are the same questions that we ask every guest this season of Mildly Interesting Questions. The last question is the question that we roll for. We rolled before we started. Allie got a critical failure, which is sad, but it's still a fine question. Something had to be question number one. So Allie, I'm going to ask you these questions. Answer them quickly as you can, but please don't stress out about it too much. If you need to pass, pass, but we're going to come back to it. Okay. Question number one. What's one habit that you would like to pick up over the next year?
I would like to pick up the habit of working out more, moving my body more.
Yay. That's a great one. Question number two. Would you rather know a little bit about a lot of things or like everything about one thing?
I feel like I already know a little bit about a lot of things, so I'd like to swap to a lot about one thing and get good at something.
Question number three. What do you need from the store?
What do I need from the store? I went to the store yesterday.
Yeah, but what did you forget?
I always need candy. So I need candy from the store.
What kind of candy, just out of curiosity?
Probably Swedish Fish. Ooh. Swedish Fish or those pull-apart Twizzlers.
Oh, those are so good. I love the pull-apart Twizzlers.
Good road trip candy.
Question number four. Would you like to survive the zombie apocalypse?
No, kill me immediately.
No.
Kill me immediately. I am not useful. I have no skills that would help in a zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question number five. What is your favorite tree?
My favorite tree?
Yeah.
It's not a palm tree. I can tell you that for damn sure. I hate palm trees. Yeah. So when I was a kid, I went to a summer camp in New York called Fieldston Outdoors. And their logo was this beautiful tree. I don't know what kind of a tree it was, but I have that logo of that tree burned into my memory from like the little t-shirts I wore and like, you know, just going to that summer camp every single summer and like loving it so much. So whatever that tree is from the Fieldston Outdoor summer camp in New York.
It's the Fieldston tree then is your favorite tree. The Fieldston tree.
Whatever that was.
Oh, that's it. That's the answer. Yeah. The Fieldston tree.
Yeah.
I mean, we can try to find out what it was if you'd like, but it can also just be the Fieldston tree. That's your favorite tree. It's a very specific tree. When I ask this question, I never know if someone will be like, I like this tree that I used to build a treehouse in and climb and blah, blah, blah. Or if they're going to be like, I like Dutch elm. Actually, there's no Dutch elms. I think it's just a tree in the our
disease
neighborhood.
Is Dutch elm disease.
I think it's just a normal elm tree.
Oh,
I didn't normal. Know that. It's not an abnormal elm tree.
How bizarre. So I found the summer camp online. I haven't thought about the summer camp in a while. They don't have a website. What the heck?
Nice.
They have a Twitter.
They're completely offline. Oh.
They have a Twitter, but they don't have a website.
Nobody has a Twitter anymore.
And the Twitter logo is an awfully, terribly ugly cropped version of the logo that doesn't look very good.
It's a hand-drawn Twitter logo. They're not.
It only exists in my heart and my memory.
We've ruined Allie's Twitter.
There. Perfect.
Yeah. Alrighty. With that said, we have wrapped up the mildly interesting questions. We are bringing to an end this amazing conversation with Allie. Rick, would you like to do the thing where you put a little bow on it and say goodbye to our friend?
Yeah, of course. Allie, thank you for spending time with us. It was a pleasure to get the chance to chat with you and really appreciate your openness and honesty about some hard topics that we touched on. Touched is probably not the right word to use there. So, but anyway,
strong.
Thank you.
Not age well, and it was like seconds ago.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really I'll cherish this opportunity to not only get the chance to meet you, but also knowing that we'll get the chance to bring you back and chat with you again. So, thank you very much for making our world more than mildly interesting. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate being on. Thank you.